Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Goeie, what's afternoon in Afrikaans?
Goeiemiddag.
Alles mensen, okay, no. Right, good afternoon. Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As usual, we're here to keep you company. This time of the day, you know, if you're a regular, that it's Home Run time. Here to always keep you company with one topic after another. Monday to Friday, and we have, split, shows that is basically different shows that's on Sunday. Now, wherever you're tuned in from, thank you for tuning into Eagle FM this wonderful afternoon. It's cloudy and it seems to be threatening us with a little bit of some showers, judging by the weather. Yeah, but that's the weather here in Windhoek, so wherever you find yourself, whatever the weather is, I know that if you're in the southern hemisphere, we are in winter, so just, stay warm. Stay warm, yeah. Get a blanket, get an electric blanket, get a human blanket, no judging. But, let's talk about trade today. Not Namibia, Africa. Africa. Minus Eswatini, Africa and China.
Why did you have to silence or slide over Eswatini like that, Helmut? Please, let's motivate that part, please.
Well, in 2024, in September of 2024, in Beijing. Now, the Chinese government, promised, a tariff-free, they already had, the tariff-free trade relations, so trade initiatives. China has already had this relationship with a lot of African countries.
Yeah.
They just, at the beginning of this month, they decided to push that awesome trade relations to all, to 53 African countries.
Yeah.
Minus, I think, Eswatini because of its, not Lesotho, definitely Eswatini because of, I think I got that from, CGTN Africa, or just a whole different source of, and that's primarily because of, the tension relations with regards to, Eswatini's relationship with Taiwan, which is, which China considers part of mainland China. But you have a lot of, because international recognition, including by the U.S., they consider Taiwan to be part of mainland China. But the state is just a very, it's a very tense one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The subject is a very, it's a very tense one.
Touch and go.
It is a touch and go. It's a, hot potato. And we have, anyone that basically look at, that has kept up or more like that, likes to look at global politics, understand, that type of relationship. Now, but, we're not here to talk about, China's, discussion, or Chinese, internal politics and how its relationship with Taiwan. We're here to talk about, Africa and China relations. In terms of specifically trade and these two places, I don't want to say these two countries because one is a continent. China has 1.4 billion people.
Yeah.
Africa has 1.39 billion people. We just round it off to the nearest. You have 1.4 billion people. So the most obvious, advantage that goes to both in terms of market size is just about the same. That's until you now start bringing in the discussion of buying power, then the whole thing begin to have a whole different discussion.
But doesn't that always flow back, link back, ring back to Yanis Varoufakis' famous video on the internet where the woman in New York got up and told him, "I don't like it that China is building bridges and and working with Africa, and then he asked, "What's wrong with that?"
And then what's wrong with bridges?
What's wrong with bridges and roads? And then she said, "I know it's good, but I just don't like
the same thing we are doing.
I just don't like it." And then he said, "Yeah, at least you know, you guys, at least the Chinese don't invade and then want to bring development." Which is literally what the opposite of the West was doing, which we obviously once again saw at the start of this year with 3 January, which still resonates very strongly, mm-hmm. because we're only in May now.
Yeah.
January is 4 months that way, Helmut. We're in May and we still remember, literally like it was a 1980s war movie, what happened on 3 January.
Yeah.
And the concern obviously is a scenario of, okay, how do we view how the US wants to deal directly with the developing world, the global South? Now remember, Venezuela is part of the global South.
Mm-hmm.
And even the UN said it's best for global South to start the South to South initiative with each other. Instead of relying on, former colonial powers to basically bring them the development, because it smacks in the face of those who are now in the post-colonial era of, which is their independences, to work with countries primarily who, clearly benefited from the role basically that they played in said colonial aspects. But, please, guys, it's a historical reference. Just to throw in a disclaimer, a major disclaimer. Yeah. We Africans played our part in colonialism, just so that you know.
We're still playing our part.
We are still playing our part. Mm-hmm.
In the neo-colonial, you think we would learn? Nope.
Nah. No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. Actually, well, you and I did. Yeah. There are those that did not.
Well, Hamut, there's nothing we can do if people are telling each other, there are people outside of your country are there to save you in your country. I've never understood that indicator. I've never understood also, like, there was a time specific when Maduro was still in Venezuela, based in Venezuela,
yeah.
where you had those other opposition people in Venezuela calling for the US to literally invade Venezuela. And I was like, are you mad? Are you mad?
That was Iraq. That was Libya. How's that going?
It's as if they are devoid, or they are divorced from the reality that we in Africa see every day. We're like, hey, okay, you know what? Start building your schools and tie your roads.
Look, I like the direction that global economies are taking in, you know, I think, and this again is, largely in part due to how China demonstrated economic development that does not involve invading a country.
Mm.
Because for a lot of countries, you can talk about the French, the Spanish, the French, the Spanish, and worse, the British, the Dutch, with their Dutch East India Company. One thing they demonstrated is that, I think they laid a very, they laid a very terrible precedence that, was, basically torn apart and rewritten by China, that, for a country to develop, to reach a significant level of economic development, it requires exploiting people halfway across the planet,
yeah.
and plundering and basically stealing their energy, their resources, and then stealing the people.
Mm.
The British did that. I think if you look at, the British also, you have to ask yourself, where did the British get it? The Romans did the same thing. So it has been a significant part of, the Ottomans did the same thing.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't until I started looking at Russian literature. That's when I discovered, the equivalent of what of figures like Chinua Achebe and Shakespeare in Russian literature is Alexander Pushkin.
Mm.
And Alexander Pushkin is his grandfather or great grandfather. He's was kidnapped by the Ottomans from modern day Cameroon, and given I think is Peter Tsar Peter the Great or the Second. Now, well, the thing is. The guy was like, okay, now you're just giving me a little boy, is a slave, and so what am I supposed to do? So just, took that little boy and gave him a royal level education. That's where we have Alexander Pushkin, who is now basically the father of Russian literature. Now, when you look at it, when you look at that, what would have happened to that guy if he was, that poor boy, if he was given to the British, boy or boy? They would have just made one heck of a plantation, a guy out of him. But the thing is, from the Romans, the Ottomans, the British, and we have seen the same thing for a large part with the US. One thing you see is that, for them to develop is like, the template was set a very long time ago that for a country's economy to develop and thrive, you need to start wars all around the world.
Yeah.
And that template was, I think, the go-to move for anyone that wanted to achieve development. You saw, even before you talk about the British, the Spanish did the same thing. The Portuguese did the exact same thing. And, again, you see the same template over and over again. And, I think it became like, the standard operating procedure that if you want your country to develop, you have to go to war.
Yep.
And start basically, persecuting and stealing people, human and natural resources all around the world to build your own empire. And China pops up and then just pulls off this, what has been now called the China's miracle.
Mm.
Without building an army and using that army to plunder resources all around the world. And in the shortest time span recorded in history of economic development, they're just towering and competing with developed countries.
Which is 50 years, basically.
Yeah. And now that's sort of like has brought about, to historians and probably military strategists that, there's a different way of doing this. You can just sit around the table with people and trade with them.
Mm.
It also works. So now we're at that point where we are now realizing that, okay, you know what? And I think that's a very good template to set for a lot of developing countries. Because now we know that you don't have to buff up your army to go to war and steal people's resources for you to develop. You can just strengthen your diplomatic relations and then trade, you still develop just fine.
But do you think we are learning?
I really wish I could say yes. I want to believe me.
Yeah, you know, with the history lesson you gave us there now.
But no.
Do you really think we are learning? Even with when Muammar Gaddafi was alive with his United Africa situation where everyone was just, that's a good praat, yo.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was just going, what is Gaddafi talking about? After Gaddafi was discovered to have financed the Lockerbie bombing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his own military guys, his intelligence were discovered to be the perpetrators.
You know, this whole intelligence.
To kill one guy on the flight.
I don't know who came up with the whole intelligent thing, but look, I'm sure it has its advantages, but what intelligent guy, what the quote-unquote intelligence communities do, forget the Tom Cruise and James Bond movie, you know, where the intelligent guy has a hot girl and is always saving the day. Yeah, not that, like the real intelligence work. It's basically stealing from each other.
Mm.
And the thing is, countries, they know that very well.
Yep.
They steal stuff from each other all the time. They lie to each other all the time, which is why I think I think that's my obsession with international relations, because I feel like the intelligent guys don't want to sort of like operate openly, so they operate somewhat in clandestine ways. Mm-hmm. And then you have the guys in suits now at the UN General Assembly.
No, yeah. That's not intelligence.
No. Those are the guys that are operating on top. They are not part of the intelligence. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to say those guys are more like the other guys.
Those are the politically correct guys.
The ones that lead you out of the office.
Yeah.
Not the ones that take you behind the shop.
Now, let's look at the template of you can trade and still achieve development, which is an awesome template. And that template has been not extended, but expanded to Africa. The question now that comes up is, this is not, you have to understand, it's not a handout relations, it's a trade relations. It's a trade relations of about, how much is that? Hang on a second. Let me get the figures from CGTN Africa. Now, this is the annual trade relations in value between Africa and China is about $300 billion. That's about $5 trillion a year.
Mm.
So the reason why I'm pointing out the fact that it's not a handout relations, it's a trade relations. That means, you have this relationship, but you still have to get something to trade with. Yeah, you will have to sell something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me just, pardon me, let me just throw a fork in this whole road. Setting aside everything extractive, what do we trade with China to take advantage of this?
We've only got meat and meat and meat and uranium.
I said no extractive.
Well, then it's just meat. I'm really sorry.
Now you see the problem?
It's just meat. And we can't produce enough because 1.4 billion people is a lot of people. It's a lot of people. Who need to eat every day? Meat.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, Elmwood.
1.4 billion people.
3 million people have to sell to serve 1.4 billion people. That's an unfair situation, I'm telling you. I'd rather us just stick to the uranium. Look, you can still deal with the UK, 60 million.
Yeah.
Because that's South Africa. We can sell to South Africa. We can sell to the UK. We can sell to a Norway who seems to have ramped up the appetite for our red meat products. But 1.4 billion is not a joke.
Yeah.
Do you know what's the worst part of that?
What's that?
This zero tariff policy.
Yeah.
As I read through the whole document. The aim is to open the door for Chinese business investment to be ramped up into our economy.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there was a word continuously repeating itself there. Refined manufacturing. Refined production methods.
Finished goods.
Refined finished goods.
Yeah.
To be also sold from Namibia that way. This means... this is potentially a similar door that is opened after the door that opened last year into Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam by Chinese companies. Do you remember that door? When
No.
Donald Trump went and said, yeah, there's this trade deficit situation with China,
mm-hmm.
and the tariffs, you know, remember, what was that? What was that? Liberation Day that was announced. The tariff announcements for mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah.
Then all the Chinese companies who are manufacturing in China just ran across the border into these three countries and opened up companies there.
And like, you know what? You're shooting yourself in the foot.
And factories. Now the products are registered as made in Cambodia. Made in. But it's Chinese companies in Cambodia. Chinese companies in Vietnam. Chinese companies in Laos.
Look, man, that's one thing I love about technicalities. You remember the early days of the Russia-Ukraine war when Western companies said, no, we are sanctioning Russia, we are pulling our companies out. No, they didn't. Those guys were just changing.
Or where they went and said, we will stop buying Russian oil and gas, and then India was like, who are you lying to?
Who is we?
Who are you lying to? It's at the end of 2022, and you are still buying Russian gas and oil.
Yeah.
And then heading into 2023, the new rhetoric began. We must stop buying Russian oil and gas. And then India went again like, who are you lying to, EU? You are still buying Russian oil and gas.
That's what Viktor Orban kept telling them. Like, guys, well, we are in between you guys and Russia. So we know you guys are still buying. So
we can see it every day.
We can see it every day. So this is the difference between what's happening in, what's happening in press conferences and what's happening in reality on the ground. Because a lot of companies said they pulled out of Russia. I think that's debatable. Most of them just rebranded.
Yeah.
They just changed labels here and there, but, you know, just still operating. That's where I think, that's why I think the most brilliant point of view you have made with in relations to, you know, in relations to comparing politics and economics is that take information coming out of the economic sphere. Everything that's coming out of the political sphere is most likely just a feel better type of words put together.
Mm.
Yeah, let's just make the people feel better about each other. We condemn this and like the most misused word I think in the world of geopolitics is we condemn. And not only is it misused, but it's also the most useless.
Yeah. That you condemn, but you are still
you're still in your
you are still going to filling up your car with Russian oil.
Uh huh.
Come on, come on.
That's interesting. Now. Look, the extractive industry, for Africa could work for Africa. Could work. So it could be one of the most traded things. But now we're talking about, value addition most. That's one of the new song now being sang all across the African continent.
Mm.
Value addition, and processing everything at home to add value and, also, well, create employment in the same process. So, which is something that looks also like China is down with it. From the look of things, if you look at Zimbabwe's, breakthrough with their, first lithium processed on the African continent.
Yeah.
So, the operation and process and companies involved in the process is, is dominated by the Chinese. So, it's processed on the African continent. So what's going to happen is, that's where my mind went when you gave the Cambodian example of now everything is made in Cambodia, made in this, made in that. So they just brought factories in those countries.
Yep. That's all they did.
Why does that sound like an excellent way of knowledge transfer? Didn't the West do the exact same thing to pretty much most, if not all, Asian countries? They took their industries there.
They did.
People worked in there, acquired the knowledge. Then now they're a competitor.
They did because if you had to look at like the Paris Peace Conference and you had to try and understand how did South Africa, Canada and Australia and New Zealand position themselves in the negotiations there at the Versailles Palace, the Palace of Versailles in Paris in 1918 at the time. Now, what is not always mentioned is the economic value that these four countries played in supporting the United Kingdom, which at that stage was Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this phrase constantly known as the Dominion, the Dominions of Great Britain, they would call themselves. And the Dominions were basically the supply for the British and India. Sorry, I keep forgetting India. They were basically the supply for the British in the First World War. The Dominions then played the same role in the Second World War. Meaning, Helmut,
mm-hmm.
yes, they had local mines and local factories in the UK, but it literally sounded like the first industrial revolution's you know, the discussion we had a little bit earlier in the week, the one about children, the one about cities, the role that cities play, because the major factories were still in the UK. And there were other factories, you know, in South Africa and in Australia and in maybe in India and maybe in Canada. But the factory, the company owned in the UK, based in Great Britain, was making the actual finished product with the raw material coming from South Africa or from Canada or from India or from Australia. And the worst thing is, then they would sell the finished product back to the same markets. So if the Australians and the Canadians, like in the Second World War, showed up on the battlefield, they were driving something that had a British engine in it. They were all using the Lee Enfield rifle from the First World War as well. There were variations of the Lee Enfield. The Australians made a variation of the rifle. The Canadians made an adaptation of the rifle. The British allowed like an intellectual property exchange program, the Americans to make a version of the rifle because the Americans could safely, without their factories being bombed, you know, because the Americans were so far away from, from Western Europe, they could safely help mass produce a version of the Lee Enfield rifle for the for the British soldiers. Because the British soldiers, then the British companies also had to ramp up production to diversify firearms because they realized that the Germans were running around with the MP40, the first submachine, not the first submachine gun that was actually created by the Italians. That was the Beretta something 18. It came out from the First World War. The, basically the Italians were the first guys to create and invent this close quarter combat, rapid warfare, situation, meaning a rifle's had to shoot faster. It was, if it was a bolt action rifle, the Germans obviously and the Austrians invented the, that Mauser pistol, that weird thing with the, you had to load the pistol from the top, but it wasn't a semi-automatic pistol. Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the one with a funny looking handle and a very, like a very,
it has this weird this chamber at the front with the muzzle running up. So that was the Mauser, whatever pistol, but it was like one of the first, like semi-automatic pistols. The Americans obviously created the 1911 pistol, the famous 1911 pistol that can come in, the Mauser, which is also the, one of the standards in military manufacturing that the Germans created was that they standardized the 9mm. Everyone now uses 9mm. They call it the Luger 9mm, but the actual 9mm creation of this caliber was caused by the Germans because the Germans realized, okay, we don't have as much metal to spare to manufacture the 7.62 caliber bullet. The 7.62 is bigger than what NATO uses. The 7.62 is about this big, Helmut. And the 5.56 is about this big. The 5.56 is what NATO uses today. But the 7.62 was a pre-First World War, up to the First World War, standard bullet. Even the Belgians made a standardized revolver that uses a 7.62 caliber. Slightly smaller, but the bullet bullet is literally almost the same thickness. And obviously during the economics of World War I to World War II, the engineers at the back realized you can't invest so much metal production into bullets. You can't. The Americans, were also running at the 7.62. They didn't create the 5.56 standard. They adopted it also from the Germans because the Germans brought out what we now call the AK-47. And I'm very surprised that many of the political scientists actually don't know where the design for the AK-47 actually comes from, which is the German scientists that were kidnapped back to the Soviet Union.
The Germans are all over these things.
They are everywhere.
Yeah.
They're literally everywhere. The German tank design and the Russian tank design is what the modern tank designs we see, even though the Americans, they did actually design a very good tank with the Sherman range, the Sherman tank range. The British also had a system, but it's only now these last tanks that the British had designed, even the ones that the South Africans, before our independence had adopted. There was a Challenger. There was a Challenger. No, it wasn't a Challenger. It had another name. It wasn't a Challenger, but it had another name.
From the Germans?
No, from the British. But the modern tank design you see today is actually a template that comes through from the German template in terms of you must find a tank design that today they're trying to make the tanks smaller. And obviously the technology is now trying to automate things, but then in many scenarios, no one wants a system where the tech company can say, okay, you didn't pay your subscription, I'm switching it off.
In the middle of a war zone.
In the middle of a gunfight, and everybody's like, nope. So everywhere during the First World War, Second World War, getting back to the British template, in terms of like this, the point that you started off with, the template we think about, which is continuously projected in history, is for a country to reach industrialization level.
Yeah.
It must have gone and colonized someone else. It must have gone and inconvenienced someone else's own developmental path. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that us Africans would have flourished without colonial intervention, because there's no way to prove it. That no one is showing us if colonialism didn't happen, would colonialism happen from somewhere else?
Yeah, that would be just mostly be conjectures, more for the most part.
Which is the bigger problem?
Because that's why every time that I read about the story of Zheng He, I can't help but think. Now you are talking about the 13, early to late 1300s to early 1400s, because your doctrine of discoveries and the Portuguese expansion into modern West Africa is not didn't come in until mid 1400s all the way to the late 1400s. You know, with the Spanish getting involved in South America, but Zheng He's call them diplomatic relation to us, because all he did was he just, he had his armada. He had an army, obviously. He was just sailing in open sea, so expect the unexpected.
Those ships were big.
They were huge.
Those ships were big, Helmut.
And they carried a lot of gifts. All he just did was exchange gifts. Now, the question that I always ask myself is, if you look at the history of colonialism, a lot of explorers showed up in somewhat the exact same way. And they, then they gradually went full colonialism. Now, the question, every time that I, read at the, how the Spanish and the Portuguese basically showed up in a lot of these new areas and started being nice before they went all full genocidal maniacs, was it the Qing dynasty at the time? Could they have, could Zheng He's explorations ended at the same way? Now that's a giant question mark, because Zheng He's, explorations were stopped because they were draining the empire's coffers. They were just too expensive.
Yeah.
Now, that for me, that's where I always pause and go like, you know what? These guys basically had a nice empire. A nice emperor, because if they had a greedy one, they would have, he would have said, okay, you know what? Your trips are draining our coffers.
Mm.
Can't you get, something in exchange that will help us replenish this? And the natural resources were there. That answer would have most likely been answered for the most part with colonialism. Now again, this is where the assumptions now comes in. So a question like that would be very difficult to answer. Now, one of my favorite African history is Carthage.
Mm.
The Carthaginians, these guys occupied parts of modern day Somalia, Eritrea, Ethiopia, that part. And they have been trading with Italians for a while. One thing the Carthaginians were good at was ocean warfare.
Mm.
Now, the Romans were terrible at that. The Romans were land guys.
Even the Greeks were good with it.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, the Romans learned a lot in terms of, first of all, how to build ships and how to fight on, how to fight in terms of navy.
Mm.
They didn't master that until until they got into, until they locked horns with Carthage.
Yeah.
And, we won a couple of times. I'm saying we because, well, Carthage is in Africa. Yeah, I'm saying we, so we won a couple of times until, the Romans showed up with a much bigger army and better technology, started kicking the heck out of us.
Mm.
Yeah. So, it wasn't until I came across that, that's when I began to realize why the East African and the East Africans have a lot in common with the Italians. Growing up, one thing I learned was 2002, 2003, I had a friend, I had a Somalian friend. That's why I learned that, spaghetti is a very significant part of Somalian staple food. And, after I realized that, spaghetti is Italian in origin, I couldn't help but ask myself, how did people in Africa end up with a staple food that is native to Europe? And the answer to that shows you about a very long historical relationship between East Africa and that and Greeks Greek, Italian, all those things.
It's like us and bread, Helmut.
It's
like right. Southern Africa and bread.
That's not our food, is it?
No, but it's convenient and it's readily available and it's fixed into a supply chain that supports it. That's the unfortunate reality.
Oh man.
It's one of the puzzling things that obviously take place, but getting back to where we technically left off, just so that our listeners know. So we obviously are stepping into a realm, dear listeners, where literally, Africa, the continent, is literally being split on which international trade relations template to technically prefer. This is a game of preference, or it's not even a game. It's a discussion of preference because, we obviously outlined to you at the start what this signifies or signals to Namibia, because Namibia basically is front and center in that particular, proposition, in terms of that it seems that there can be an opportunity, a gateway for both sides of Namibia and China actually to grow together,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously speaks to benefits. I'm not subduing or ignoring the benefits that will take place from here, but this sounds a lot better on paper, primarily, than the AGOA discussion, because AGOA was all about just selling to the United States. AGOA wasn't about also buying from the United States. Whereas this particular discussion, this zero tariff approach by China, is based upon a scenario of saying, hey, listen, let's build a trade bridge between each other. Let's take the relationship.
Let's make it easy to trade.
Let's take it to the next level. Now, there is currently, Helmut, in Namibia, one such particular template taking place.
Which one?
And it's the green hydrogen, or the green industries, as they are now called. Because it is about investing in Namibia for Namibia to sell to Europe. And it is a discussion that obviously sees, for example, a place like Namibia and the whole continent at large becoming a little bit more sort of like, I don't want to use a human reference, but unfortunately it starts sounding like a human reference. You know, it's the child that stands in front of its three interesting candies. It's three favorite sweets. Or it's the video gamer that's standing in front of its three favorite games and it's been given a choice of make a choice. Which one do you prefer? And the person who's under this particular dilemma obviously enjoys all three, values all three for their merits, appreciates all three for the joys, the lows,
and they're all beneficial.
They're all beneficial. No one is superior to the other one. Hence, when you also look at this zero tariff approach and zero tariff engagement between China and Africa,
yeah.
It literally says, okay, you can now start selling whatever you've got to us.
Which is why I started. What are you selling?
And it will have no entry level. It will have no entry tariff into the economy as long as what I also read, it meets certain standards of entering into the economy. And here's the best thing. The product actually is linked to the market, meaning that there's a direct access point for the product to be seen to be consumed on the market, which is always not the case in terms of, because we have to hear here in Namibia, for example, like the I don't know if he's still the CEO of Meatco, Mr. Mushikabanji, but he once explained and that was back in 2023. That was a media engagement at the start of that year. We highlighted that Meatco at that stage has a from the farm to the consumer track and tracing mechanism to prove to consumers or the consumer markets that we have, for example, like Norway, that the meat they see on the shelf, there's a clear distinction. You can see that this is Namibian red meat versus being mixed in with the other products, which has also been the big dilemma, for example, like Namibia's diamonds, because Namibia's diamonds were also lumped together, which was one of the other things that many of the proponents in the Namibian economy kept mentioning, that the reasons why the diamond marketing agencies like NDTC and Namdia were established was to sort of like promote the uniqueness of Namibian diamonds and not for them to be lumped together with the Botswana diamonds, the South African diamonds, who else also makes diamonds in SADC? I think Lesotho or Eswatini, one of the two. So that it's not sold as a basket of Southern African diamonds. You clearly say this is Namibia, this is Botswana, this is South Africa, this is who and this is what. I think Zimbabwe is also in there, but not part of that cluster situation. But yeah, and it sounds as another positive, because that's a value proposition, part of the overall agreement. But we obviously face a dilemma, because there are interesting things mentioned at the engagement that our colleague David and Franz were at, because they actually were at the announcement of this particular document. I just want to pull that document up, Helmut. Where did I save this thing? But
the one you shared?
Yeah, the one about the policy itself. But it's an indicator or an indication of what we actually want to see happen with regards to trade between Namibia and large countries, or Namibia and major powerhouses, I'll call them powerhouses, who carry some heavy weight.
Economically,
militarily even. You can go either in many directions with that statement.
Okay, here's the thing. Now that you mentioned you're describing it in a sense of a dilemma.
Yeah.
Now I have a question that I didn't have until you made that point.
But it is a dilemma.
The question I want to ask based on that dilemma. Word that you just interesting choice of words is one of are we gonna have to pick one?
I don't think so,
because we have advantages obviously coming out of the zero tariff trade with China.
Yeah,
and you have the Europeans are also investing significantly and sort of like we started off on a wrong foot type, but we can do this even much better with trade. And yeah, and boy are they putting in the effort. And on one side you have Donald Trump also sailing his ship with the America First global health strategy and the national security strategy and all those things. Now, this all spells a relationship with China. So you have the U.S., zoning in terms of, bettering its relationship with China, its relationship with Africa.
Yeah.
The Europeans are doing the exact same thing. China is doing the exact same thing. When you look at it, it's beginning to look like a race between the three major economic hubs. And they're all looking at Africa for their specific interest. And tech is one thing they have in common, especially China and the US.
It is, Ahmed. You nailed it on the head. Reason being, there's a conversation we had last year about, and the year before, about do we have a plan for the world as Africans?
I thought we answered that one. No. Yeah, others have a plan for us, not us.
And this is how these plans start taking shape in our faces. You know, you remember in high school when the kids used to say to each other, in your face, you know, when you were embarrassed by something, in your face, they would come and tell you, in your face, in your face.
That's the meanest thing.
Or they would make those other sounds like, bosh, in your face. And you're like, look at this idiot. What are you doing? But yeah, so what's happening in our faces as Africans and as Namibia?
Yeah.
Is we are seeing how someone else has a plan for us. Now, Helmut, if you go and look up, like you're doing right now, you go look up Namibia's international relations policy now. The first line in Namibia's international relations policy document starts with, we are a friend to everyone and we are an enemy to no one. Now, that does not actually mean that you have a plan. That just means you want to sit on the fence and you are inviting plans to come and dictate to you. Now, such a particular laissez-faire announcement in your policy setup technically tells everyone else, okay, so I can think for you. Are you fine with that? Now, in many cases, you would see that in real life. You would see, you know, when you as a guy go and approach a girl, you would get the girl that will tell you, okay, everything you say is okay. You'll say, okay, can I take you on a date? Okay. And later on, you'll be frustrated because the person's not really saying anything, but it seems like the person wants you to do everything. Or it's what some ladies, what I've detected, yes, I've done detective work by detecting what some of you ladies say, you know, the klein tongue, the small tongue, the small voice, which always subconsciously leaks out in the words and actions that you guys say.
Yeah.
Is that... sometimes the ladies will say, a guy must make all the planning when they go out on a date, ne? Which in many cases, us guys, we hate it.
Thank you very much for pointing that out.
We hate it. I'll tell you today, and this is not about a gender discussion that transcends from this morning's engagement on the unpacking into now the home run. But just to let you know, we guys don't like it. We hate it. But if... And you know what's the thing that the trap we always fall into? The ladies will always hate the suggestions. If you're dating the person, they will always hate the suggestion for a date that you come up with as a guy. Because now your kneecaps are being butchered off by your own girlfriend because you decided to take her to a burger joint, a joint that sells hamburgers. But she wanted to dress up and invite her five homies and you were saying, hello, it's you and me. It's not you and your five homies.
Yeah. I'm working on a budget.
I'm not feeding the girls' club or the
where am I, PEPFAR?
The Pink Panther Association, you sure? You're even going with PEPFAR, Amor.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could have just as gone with Jeffrey Epstein's Association.
And that's too disturbing.
But we actually hate it.
I go for people that either have jobs. Or they are doing their assignments, not those ones that are doing finger painting.
Oh, who tell you? No, oh, first, what was the one girl that I met? She posted her number on one of those dating sites I was on, and she was like, and I texted her, you know, on WhatsApp. I said, hey, listen, you put your number there, so hi. And she said, and the first question she asked is, do you have money? I asked her, money for what? No, if you're going to react with me. And then I asked her, okay, what's your price? And she asked, what price? I was like, but you're talking about money. What are you saying?
That's one heck of a conversation.
And then she literally says, like, no, you must have money to maintain. I was like, what? Okay. Then I just say, hey, listen, I'm not here to come and fight. I was just making contact. But now I see what kind of a personality you are. Because you literally get those kinds of women that look at us men as literally walking, talking ATMs. That is a disturbing temper to have. Like, there's unfortunately us, my gender, who just look at women for carnal pleasure. They just look at women for carnal entertainment. It's a researched template, guys. You can go and read about it. It's very disturbing because it actually also shows that there was something very wrong with these people in their households. So, we obviously face a major dilemma, not just as a continent, but as Namibia as well, because Namibia's international relations, is actually being determined for it, even though our international relations policy, I just want to see the validity of that policy document, was a new one launched because I don't.
All right, while you're looking for that document, we have a commercial break coming up. See you on the other side.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo IGL FM otuna ebi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune uto otukwetira o special getashia kengeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko IGL FM onora etatu imwe ali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ileko berewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, IGL FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue. One thing I'd like to point out. 0832-888-401. I haven't forgotten that. So it's a good thing I still have it in my head. So you can call in and participate China Africa trade relations, 0832-888-401. There are a lot of questions that basically comes to mind once you look at the whole tariff free trade and Eswatini is not part of that. Very awesome, you know, enhance the Africa-China trade relations collabo. Yep. Sorry, Swatini, but we are not in Swatini, so we are in, well, we're in Namibia. So the biggest question for me that raises that comes up is that the moment the word trade is pointed out, and one thing is that aid has been, we have tried aid and we have seen how, you know, we have seen basically aid shortfalls. And now the relationship between Africa, not just Africa, but each individual country with a lot of other markets is, has shifted from a trade-based one, especially Western, the Western world, that's Europe and the US, has shifted from an aid-based to a trade-based. Now, that brings up the question of, okay, what are we going to trade? What are we going to trade to benefit from all the trade relations that that we have with either China, Europe, or the US, mm-hmm. in order for us to benefit from the established trade relations, like flexible or fluid, flexible trade relations with each of these respective markets? You know what? The reason why I pointed out earlier that put the extractive industry aside and then you will come up when you ask yourself that question of what is Africa going to trade with either China, the EU, or the US to benefit from all the trade arrangements we've made with all three regions. One thing that comes to mind is minus the extractive industry. Do we have anything else to trade
or to offer?
Exactly, or to offer. Then the picture becomes a very gloomy one. becomes a very gloomy one. And that's just let's just say, okay, you know what? Let's just include in all the extractive industry. And then you look at who is dominating the continent's extractive industry. It's mostly foreign multinational corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So, if your mine, for example, if your mine of whatever it is that you are mining in that mine is owned, mostly or wholly by a Canadian company, and you are, at this point, are you trading with China or just Canada indirectly trading with China?
And then listing that, this was produced, there was some sort of value addition, but in some cases, for example, like the copper that comes from Zambia through to Walvis Bay, then gets signed off that it was copper from Namibia, and you're like, it's here. It's here.
Look at it this way.
Who are you lying to? It's here. Who are you lying to?
Did you see that meme of that little boy who took a picture of himself and then I think put on some makeup and a wig and took another and then put them side by side and then it was captioned in a relationship with a name with a girl on the other side.
With himself.
in a relationship. Yeah, and then also at the bottom is captioned, who is this boy trying to fool? Now that's us. That's Africa.
So we're playing cross dressing. My goodness.
It becomes a discussion that's centered on two pillars, legislative and management on a continental level. Now, let me just point out on the management part. Let's just take Senegal as an example because I'm just tired of making fun of Mozambique. And unfortunately for politicians and fortunately for me, politicians always bring up new action. They always update their action so that I can just, have something new to talk about.
There's a new victim for us.
There's a new victim. This one is Senegal. Let's go to the IMF, to the IMF themselves. IMF March 2025. An IMF mission visited Senegal to review funding of the audit report by the Court of Auditors, confirming significant underreporting of fiscal deficits and public debt between 2019 and 2023. Mm. So these guys were basically, I think that's a term that I've heard a lot coming out of the field of accounting. These guys are basically cooking the books and telling IMF, you know what, our debt to GDP ratio is on this level, so we're still good. You can just give us money. So the IMF packaged, I think, an amount of, 1.8 billion.
Mm.
Yeah. 1.2, it's just 1.2, 1.8 billion. They were like, they were ready to assist Senegal for whatever it is that they needed this money for. Before we give you this money, we don't want to operate on the principle of trust me, bro. Can we just have access to the information? Then they had access to the information. And that's with the new FIA administration now. Because the guys that were just lying through their teeth, that was Macky Sall's administration. And now the FIA administration in this very nice collab with the IMF, they came together, just looked at the books and were like, yeah.
And you guys want us?
I hate to break it to you guys, but, well, my predecessor was lying to you guys. And
help you? You want us with that rubbish? You want us to help? Do you think it's right? No. Okay.
Look. That is corruptionus maximus.
That one.
Mm-hmm.
There's not even steroids there. It's just big.
Yeah. And my favorite part comes here. Yeah. Senegal's economic activity in 2024 maintained a resilient preliminary estimates point to a real GDP growth of around 6%. I just leave all that aside. Look, first of all, that's not from Senegal. That's coming from Yeah, that's coming from, oh no. That's, you know, it's in quotation marks, so definitely Senegal.
That's someone's words.
Jesus, these guys, look, it's becoming difficult to defend Africa, guys.
There's just no way for us to turn to.
It's becoming difficult to defend Africa. First of all, you have to understand that, every country, every continent has corruption issues. One of the things that the Chinese President Xi Jinping, like from the early days of his presidential campaigns, one thing that he's been running on is to crack down on corruption. So China, just like any other country or bloc or continent, has corruption issues. Now, I don't read Mandarin. I don't read much of what's coming out of, obviously much of what's coming out of China as to how creative they are at masking their corruption. But in Africa, every time I read stories like this, it takes me back to what Professor Lumumba said, that corruption entails some degree of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what's happening in Africa is not corruption. Mm-mm. It's not corruption. It's looting on an industrial scale.
Of course. Of course. And I'm just saying of course, you know. Because
so.
Just to say of
course. We want, and by the way, Europe has corruption. We're not going to mention the US. That's when it's, that's very easy.
Okay, so we.
What do we trade is my question. Minus the extractive. I don't have a very, I don't have an answer that is not, that doesn't, if I wrote it down, it would make for, what's that, Antonio Guterres' favorite?
For sobering reading.
Would make for a sobering reading.
Okay, so our actual policy document, Hamoud, is from 2017.
Our, it's in Namibia or Africa?
Namibia, okay. For international relations policy document.
Yeah.
We've had strategic plans.
Of course we have.
Up until, the last three uploads on the website itself of the Ministry of International Relations and Trade speaks to international relations activities, strategic planning that takes place. But now, obviously, looking deeper into said document of said strategic plan for 2025 to 2030, which is a 5-year period. Mm-hmm. Said document, let me just go down. Let me see what's page 2. Okay, it's just a placeholder. Okay, so the overview of the strategy is technically nothing. Wonderful. Absolutely nothing that's in this document.
Okay, now I have one question.
Literally, I can't even download the thing.
So it's no. Is it? Is the document not downloadable, or our strategy is nothing?
I'm trying to download the thing, Hamid, okay. To open up.
Hey, there's a document, so let's hope the.
And the document is showing me preview, and I'm like, stop showing me preview.
No, I think our strategy is very easy to see if you look at,
show me the download symbol.
Vision 2030, NDP 6.
Okay, let me just read from
here. Agenda 2063.
Okay, so according to the ministry itself, the strategic plan for 2025 to 2030 is geared towards, advancing peace, security and stability, prosperity, sustained economic growth, trade and investment, reduced income inequality, youth. I put in the truth there. The youth and women empowerment and environmental sustainability and promotion of our cultural heritage. So it's a lot of stuff in there. Trade and investment is literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. It's in position 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Position 6 and 7.
Okay, how do I paint this picture in a way that does not sound, make me, home run sound like mind the gap? Let's just face it. On a technical level, and I love technicalities, like every maniac with ADHD, love technicalities because they point to a lot of patterns. Also love those. If I have this country called, Helmut Republic, and that country has a lot of foreign-owned mines that are mining and shipping everything in its raw form. And now I have a trade relationship with a different country, or even the one that owned the mine. At this point, am I really trading? Or is, take for example, I have like my early example of Canada. Canada has a mining company in Namibia, again, example. And this company is now going for, tariff-free trade, a bandwagon with China. At this point, is Namibia trading with China or Canada trading with China?
Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, my. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. So let's just look at the bright side, the advantages and disadvantages to everything. So just focus on the bright side. Tariff-free trade, and we have AGOA on one side. You have the EU also, going more and more cozy. Actually, the EU has gone a little too cozy because we even have joined Vision 2030 with Africa. So I feel like the EU is now at Psalms 23 part of life of David, where he's just looking back at all the betrayals that he carried out, and now with his best friend knocking up his best friend's wife, getting homeboy killed and all that. Now he's regretting with 150 chapters in the book of Psalms. That's Europe. But well, we started off on a wrong foot, and also that's a good start. But the U.S. national security strategy points towards the shift of the U.S. Relations with Africa from an aid-based one to a trade-based one. And the EU just pointed out aid not enough. Let's focus on trade. And now we have China going with, I will take it even further. We already have 4-5 trillion Namibian dollars trade, worth of trade between Africa and China. So let's kick things up a notch. Let's have a tariff-free trade. Let's make this trade even more flexible. And I still have one question. What is it that we are going to trade with China, putting aside the extractive industry? Because Africa's economy overall is heavily reliant on the extractive industry. And we're talking about China here. What are we going to sell them? Textile? They produce a lot of those. Last time I checked, order with me is largely based on textile, aka garments, aka clothes. So let's think, what else? Food, meat, check. The rest of, other than meat, I am thinking here. Yeah. Electronics. First of all, we can't sell what we don't produce, so that's out through the window. So we can't sell them cell phones and all that. And now let's look at the digital platforms. They make a lot of that, both social media, AI, everything from hardware to software, they produce it. So that means Africa is one heck of a market now. And anything that Africa can get can now, have a 1.4 billion people market size in China. Question is, what is it? No, let's start manufacturing toothpicks and underwears. They already make that. Right. So, condoms also, by the way, they make that. At this point, I can't help but go, yeah, we really have to invest in manufacturing. Starting from research and development into skills. Actually, skills, research and development. And also, by the way, skills and research and development. Oh, China is also big with that. I'm not sure if that's one of those, trade relations that will take place because there will be, you know, tariff-free trade. That, you know, the whole skills development is part of the, although that will be, is it part of a tariff-free trade? Now, because our strong suit at this point, now I'm really trying to make myself sleep better at night. So I have to tell myself something that will give me some degree of comfort. And, oh, by the way, 0832888401. The line is open. Call. On home run. To participate in our discussion. Now, let's just focus on the extractive, on the extractive resources, the extractive resources. The goal of a lot of African countries is to process everything at home. And Ghana is facing that head on. And, they're not joking. They're just passing not instruction at this point to local mining, to multinational extractive industry-based companies that are operating within their borders. They are forcing them into an arranged marriage with local companies or of the same type skill set requirements. They're telling you whether you like it or not, you two will have to form a collabo. Want to build this knowledge base at home. Which is a brilliant idea because if you look at it, that helped China build themselves to where they are today. Thanks to this thing called greed. And shareholders always want to maximize their already maxed out profits or dividends. They are always forcing their executives to figure out new ways to bring about growth in the company. So they decided to, instead of leaving their industries in the US, they decided to take them to where they will find flexible, prices in terms of employment and all that. And now this is about what, 70s or 80s, shipped most of their industries to China. Now, China didn't say you are manufacturing everything, so when are we going to start manufacturing ours? So, oh boy, are they patient. I think, after looking at that, my biggest fear is a war starting and I'm a soldier and I have to face a Chinese sniper. Do you have an idea how patient you have to be? To sit and then, work for predominantly foreign companies and build your people's skill base on that. Which I think, Zimbabwe is slowly having a head start. Assuming they just keep up what they started this year, which is processing lithium at home. I think the company that did the processing is a subsidiary of a Chinese-owned company, which is based in China. But that was, just picture it this way. Think of it of, in the 1980s, an American company making its first, products produced within China, but under the leadership of a Chinese-owned, of an American-owned company with the, in collabo with a local one. You know who else is making headways in that, even though this is more in Asia? Indonesia. Because Indonesia told Apple, I believe last year or the year before last, that for your next iPhone that you're going to make, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to source some of the materials to, or, and some of the parts, make them here. Make them here. We have a lot of, you know, we are training, we have a lot of graduates that are coming out of universities to make these things. So, well, you can make them here. And Apple tried to play hardball, and the Indonesian government was like, okay, fine. If you make everything outside our market, don't bring it to sell it here. And Apple was like, okay, you know what? Fine, fine. You're right. You know, just make everything. Actually, Apple tried to say, okay, you know what? I have a better solution. I have these millions of United States dollars. If you can just let me make my stuff and have access to your market. And the Indonesian government was like, oh no, it's not money that we want. You can keep your money. It's the skills that we want. Can you imagine if that was with most African leaders I don't want to mention? They would have taken the money. Like, you know what? Did you say how many? Millions of dollars. Oh, yeah, just give me that. You know what? They'll acquire the skill somehow. But Indonesia was like, keep your money. Was that Indonesia or Malaysia? No, Malaysia. Was like, you know what? You can keep your money. It's not money that we want. The agreement was like, it was you make some of the parts from this device here. That's the only condition you have to access our market. Apple tried to throw in a lot of, a lot of money to try to persuade the Malaysian government, and the Malaysian government was like, oh no, that's awesome. That's a lot of money. Excellent idea, but keep your money. We want the skills. We want to boost the skills here at home.
That was Indonesia, Helmut.
That was Indonesia. I keep confusing them. Yeah.
They literally border onto each other.
Here's the thing. What I'm talking about here is if the option of Apple tried to persuade the Indonesian government with a whole lot of money. Mm. Like, how about we just give you this money and then we can just do our manufacturing and still have access to your market with this new device that we're about to bring out.
Mm.
And the Indonesians were like, no, not really. You can keep your money. Just our deal still stands.
Mm.
Produce some parts here. Then you can access our market.
Empower local content policy that is fitted into your product so that your product is compliant with our trade relations or our trade agreement that we signed with you.
Yeah, which you agreed to, by the way. Now, picture that option. Look at Africa from Fish Road to Nabond to now Senegal.
You like this. Okay, let me stop.
You're welcome. I'm picturing an African leader being approached with that option of, just give us access to your market. How about we just give you this money and then you let us manufacture whatever we want. I think some of these guys would have gone with, we can just redraft the whole agreement anyway.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking of processing now, because we want to, we talk about the whole value addition discussion in terms of natural resources across the continent, and that's a cross-continent discussion. And how are we going to empower local content and create the quote-unquote value addition here by processing things here at home if we are not investing in any of it for the most part?
Yeah.
And just putting all that aside, where I started on was, I'm trying to come up with something that, apart from the extractive industry, that we can trade with China. We can't trade with them. We can't sell them clothes. They make most of them.
I was now trying to look for that reporter that I used like 3 years
ago. We can't sell them cell phones because we don't make any of it.
Yeah, we don't even make the chipboards for the cell phone. We don't make anything for anything.
Not even a screen protector. Come on, be serious, guys.
Yeah.
But that's
our
us.
Best hope probably would have been if South Africa was going to play a part in actually bridging that gap. But then South Africa seems to be just as lazy as the rest of us Africans. No, really, Helmut. Helmut, Nissan is no longer manufacturing Nissan in South Africa. Nissan South Africa,
for the same reasons,
is not manufacturing Nissan anymore. Obviously because of whatever's happening in Tokyo and in Japan. But
so it's a Tokyo problem, not a Joburg problem.
Obviously, yeah, because that's what multinationals do. You know, you won't lose the market. You just won't produce in the market Now you'll concentrate and what they call that and consolidate your manufacturing efforts somewhere else to basically bring the thing still to the same market. You'll still service the same market.
Yeah.
The concern is for anyone who's bought Nissan in Namibia, basically, it just probably makes that a little bit of a challenge for you, for the product, to now still be at the same market prices. Because if Nissan Global now decide that, you know, your Navara bikes are now going to come out of Australia or out of Indonesia or out of the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to happen. But the unfortunate thing is there's no longer a factory just here across the border that literally can supply you with the parts ready made. Now the parts have to be made while, order of the bikes, you know, like the Middle East Dubai order situation with the Land Cruiser buggies.
Oh yeah, that.
Yeah. So those guys can't make the car, but the car is ordered out of Malaysia or out of Indonesia or out of Australia, but Toyota Japan and Nissan Japan, they see the order being placed, the money being paid, and they just tell the hub that is manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
hey, listen, send to that market, just produce here and send. Now obviously. In the world of consumer durables, for a manufacturing company, it's all about how do you consolidate the resources, manage your financial position, because it is about cash flow, and also how do you still try to stay compliant to the local laws of the jurisdiction, i.e. the market that you're operating in, which is one of the biggest challenges, because you've got countries like Namibia shouting, bring local content policy here.
Mm-hmm.
But Namibians are not educated or skilled on the level of what you want the workforce to be at. Meaning, let's say you're working with robotics and with advanced engineering concepts to manufacture, and as well as also the particular parts to, you know, to, or systems to make the thing. You're possibly working with Namibians that are probably like 15 years behind in skills.
Aren't we facing the same problem with the green hydrogen?
That too. Now we have to repurpose. Firstly, we have to upskill the institutions.
Yeah.
So that the people can just offer
the qualifications of that level.
Yeah. Secondly, the guys that are already in the training pipeline, like the guy that we discovered with the youth in hydrogen, green hydrogen guy from last year, where he said he's a specific kind of an engineer, a civil or a structural, one of the two, but he now had to refine or select a more strategic path to fit into, was it mechanical engineering? Yeah, he's mechanic. So from mechanical, he now had to select another path that takes him into the specialization for working on wind turbines and the likes. And then the homeboy that came and stood next to him, who was who had the advanced welding certification,
mm-hmm.
who said literally the vocational centers in Namibia only reach up and only train you up until level 4 or 5, which in a German context or in a European context is literally like primary school welding that you're doing. You need to up the game to reach level 8, which is another 3 levels of certification that you've got to go through. Technically, yeah. Probably another 3 years of training. And then they both highlighted that we don't produce wind turbine technicians. We now need to repurpose an engineer to do a technician's job. And if you don't know what that means, that's a downgrade for an engineer. That's an engineer who's supposed to be the boss of the technician.
No, which engineer is going to say, you know what, retrain me to something lower than the qualifications I already have?
Yeah, but now you need that guy to do the job here because you're not producing the guy from the opposite end.
Yeah, but the question I will ask you after spending those long engineering mathematics nights will be, what's in it for me?
Yeah, so now that job category probably will now be overinflated because you've got a guy that's too skilled working in this sphere who's going to demand that salary.
Yeah.
And yes, that'll be a reality, guys. That'll be a reality because unfortunately, the more educated you are, the more you understand your rights in the labor market.
Yeah.
And your demands and your needs in the labor market.
Look, one thing I respect about the fields like engineering is that I know according to Neil deGrasse Tyson, he once said that, who is this? Isaac Newton invented calculus on a day. And now it's it's a foundation for a lot of fields that are, for a lot of fields, including engineering. But calculus is not a joke.
Yeah, it's not. Ask you have to go and interrogate Hamoud. How many people here in Namibia are taught secondary school mathematics, which prepares you for calculus? And it's not just calculus. There's another discipline in mathematics. There's another one. There's statistics as well, but there's another one that branches out from calculus. Calculus. Predominantly, you'll find it for the medical school guys. But there's another one that technically plays the foundation for the ICT and the also engineering.
Yeah.
There's another mathematics there. Then there's a mathematics for the financial guys. The actuarial sciences guys that I mentioned. Yeah. Their whole subject is just math.
And
their whole subjects, they have a math here.
Yeah.
And a math for finance and a math for accounting. And then there's another math. It's just math. And then there's an English subject hanging loose somewhere.
And I have seen most of that math. There's not a lot of numbers in there.
Mm.
Yeah. I looked at my cousin and I'm like, yeah, you know what? You do that. She's doing accounting. And
accounting has some very useful principles, Hamoud. It's just,
yeah, she's explaining things. Look, the good thing is she doesn't know jack about geopolitics. That's where I shine.
And it's not a competition. It's not a competition.
look, everyone has their strength and weakness.
They definitely do, but it's not a competition.
But one thing I've come to learn being close to people that are either work, whose daily lives is to work with, whose sole jobs is to work with money.
Mm.
And those that are studying towards it is just how much a lot of us don't value money. Because in their line of work, they will tell you, like you always say, every cent must be accounted for.
Mm. Hamoud,
Every cent. I'm sitting at home with a bowl of tin cents. I don't even know what to use them for. I was like, yeah.
Well, oh, no, you can take them and exchange them at a shop, and then the shop will give you the money equivalent, like a note, a $5 or $10.
Yeah.
I've done it before. They are actually glad when you bring it. Huh. I inadvertently sit and collect the things at home.
Yeah.
I collect them in these little glass bottles, like old coffee bottles, Jacob's Kroening bottles, and then it makes your wallet heavy, man. And your wallet feels more like a weapon of mass destruction. Then it actually feels like a container for your financial prospects in life. No, I don't want my wallet to be a weapon, an aerial weapon of mass destruction. It should actually be an item for good, not an item for potential calamity.
It would. Self-defense. Work.
Self-defense? No. No, that's all I'm talking about. Referring back to the aspect of basically how central data is to trade.
That's another one.
We will have to step up our game, Helmut. When we deal with China, like we are dealing today with China.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying in like it's a competitive nature. I'm saying in the sense of like what the zero tariff discussion means. This zero tariff discussion means it now. It's like the AfCFTA forewarning that I keep giving.
Mm-hmm.
Are we, Southern Africa, going to bulldoze the rest of Africa because of our stability, our ability for the South African businesses and private sector to proliferate throughout the SADC region? Or will there be certain dark horses within the AfCFTA realm that could actually grow this way towards us?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in both scenarios, we are speaking of positive trade. However, there will be victims. There are going to be victims.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is China saying to the 53 African countries, my door is open. Let's see what my door is open, but I want your door to be open
mm-hmm.
for the same two-way street.
This
is a two-way street. This is not going to be a one-way. Leading to me, this is not AGOA. Let me tell you now, mm-hmm. it's not AGOA. AGOA was a one-way street to the US.
You were selling.
And AGOA felt like a pet project. It felt literally like, let's donate, let's lower the trade barriers for Africans
mm-hmm.
to sell into the US. That's AGOA's spirit. That's saying, ah, shame, you poor Africans. You know what?
You poor thing.
We will make it easy for you. Yes. Cause, you know, you just cannot compete. And you're like, okay, sharp. But now China is telling us, us, the 53 of us, the door is open, but it's a two-way street. There is no one way. Just leading to me.
China's door is open. And
it has always been open.
Yeah, Africa's door is open. The thing is, the room is a little messy because, Begale Thomas
room is messy?
Yeah, it's messy because.
Which room? AfCFTA?
Yeah, the infrastructure is not speaking to the theoretical plan.
Mm.
Of the of the objective that we would like to accomplish, and this is one thing. I mean, we talked about this, and that's where we kept going back to Begale Thomas, because she addressed, like our infrastructure setup. First of all, it's heavily extractive, and it's one way to the port.
Yeah, which is. There's this Atlantic situation with Europe and with North America.
Yeah.
Which just looks a little bit perverse. That's why I call it the perversion of trade. Because it's a weird way of doing business.
Yeah.
And every time when I tell fellow Africans, look at South Africa. Why can't we be South Africa? Where you are literally telling people, if you come here, you're bringing the best of your technology to me. We've got weird car companies. I don't know if you see those car brands, Hamoud. These new Chinese brands. Jetour and what's the other one's name? I must say Chopra, but that's an Indian name.
I've seen the Jetour.
Is it Omeda or Omai?
That's a nice SUV.
The design.
Yeah.
Design, Hamoud, is an old design.
It mimics
another car's design.
There's
a whole bunch of those cars mimic another car's design.
There's one meme that went all over social media a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
I think I found that thing in last year, around November, December. Yeah, that was captioned. My wife doesn't control me. And then it's the next line reads like, so the Haval was your idea. And...
I'm really sorry.
First of all, there's nothing wrong with the Haval. That's a meme.
But it came out really funny. Yeah, it does. It still comes out funny, Hamoud. Yeah. Because if you have an established car taste, let's for example say you're a car connoisseur, you were the Top Gear,
car enthusiast.
Yeah, car enthusiast. You had your preset.
Yeah.
Did you know that James May, even though with all the money that they made there from the Top Gear, those three presenters from the Top Gear time that they were still working for the BBC, James May's favorite car was a Fiat 500.
Yeah, he kept talking about that.
And then he kept buying a whole bunch of Fiats.
Is it a Nissan Sandero? Which one is it?
No, that's the, you're talking about the Dacia Sandero, which is technically a Renault.
That's one of the cars that May couldn't shut up about.
Yeah, and the other two were telling him, ah, shut up, May. It's just, cause they kept, what was Clarkson's nickname for him? Captain Washing Machine, what was it? Yeah, Captain Washing Machine or something like that. But the Sandero, or what they were driving when they were in Romania, which is Dacia, because in Romania it's Dacia, and certain cars of Renault, because Dacia is part of the Renault group, certain products of the Renault stable are branded in Dacia. Now, you will find the same car in Europe branded as Dacia. In Namibia, it is Renault. It is a Renault engine in the car. It's just the badge that changes and the name on the body. But it's a Renault engine. It's a Renault.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just keep my eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, my. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. 14 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And I think I repeated it like a 1,000 times now. Okay, that's an overstatement. But the line is open. It's 083-288-401. You can call and participate in our tariff-free trade relations or trade initiative coming out of Beijing to the entire continent of Africa. So it's just important to have a discussion around what is it that you see in Africa, or if you look at African markets, that we have the potential to trade with China outside of the extractive industry. And that is one interesting discussion. And if we have the tariff-free discussion, which is a good initiative, and we also have another trade arrangements coming out of Europe and trade arrangements coming out of coming out of the US, and they are all there's basically a significant shift, especially with regards to Europe and the US relationship to Africa. There's a significant shift of that relationship from an aid-based one to a trade-based one. Now, before we just start talking about trade relations, relations with economic powers like China, the US, and Europe, what do we have to trade with these blocks that is not extractive-based? And if you just look at the relationship alone, everything sounds very awesome. Until you ask a question of what is it that we have on the table that we are willing to offer and basically benefit from all these trade arrangements. And you begin to realize, maybe our strength, let's just focus on our strength here, which is the extractive industry. Are we going to keep shipping it out of the continent in raw form, or are we going to... design it in a way that are we going to do what Indonesia did, ask all these multinational corporations to basically start setting up processing plants on the African continent to boost up local content on the continent. And if we're going to do that, and how is that going to fit in with our boosting trade with each other? That's the Africa Continental Free Trade Area comes in. Considering the African Continental Free Trade Area theory and the practical in terms of energy and infrastructure development, they are not speaking to each other.
That's way back, Helmut, in... When did the AFCFTA become mainstream? Was it 2021, 2022? That's why back in 2022, the word ratification is still strong. Ratification, and I see here the Ministry of International Relations and Trade, they are on their socials promoting the former MP Thuben Gurirab International Relations Dialogue. They always have this every year. And one of the guest speakers, alongside the minister, that being Minister Musavi Ashipala, is going to be Wamkele Mene from the AFCFTA. So it seems he's going to have, like, you know, a great participatory engagement. But himself, Wamkele, remember when we did the World Economic Forum thing about what is Africa's role or what is Africa trying to achieve, where the guy from Old Mutual was sitting right next to him? What's that president? The president that later on kept quiet as the two South Africans were dominating the conversation about Africa's vision. And you could literally hear, once again, the, you know, the voice behind it was the South Africans are coming out with their competitiveness for an African agenda. The thing is here, Hamoud, that ratification on a continent-wide impacting document was not possibly the best way to do this. You can't leave it hanging in the air for the heads of state to decide, must we say yes or no, and then beg them since 2018 to agree to this document in spirit. The whole thing should have been like, if you are in the AU, ne? If you're an AU member, we've got to fast track a document to achieve a goal. We can't have individual goals persisting, and you still have Namibia. Look at the hot property Namibia has been. A high-level Russian delegation comes to Namibia to cement further trade relations with Namibia. China now tells Namibia directly there'll be zero tariff. The tariffs will be removed as trade barriers for Namibia and China to grow closer together.
Yeah.
And then in the same breath, it was highlighted, but Namibia has to agree to terms and conditions that are affiliated to this particular trade negotiations.
Yes, of course it's going to come with the terms and conditions.
It's a contract.
You have to meet this and these requirements and this and this.
It's a, Helmut, it's a contract.
It's, otherwise then it will be.
But what happened with AU? Who has ratified? What does the word ratification mean, listeners, dear listeners? Ratification means I agree in principle to what you are telling me. So to agree in principle means, yeah, I like it for where it stands.
You know what? I'm down.
Yeah, but as long as it's there and not here. And just like that, Helmut, AFCFTA will not materialize.
The biggest problem with the AFCFTA that I just like to point out because, well, it's funny, is how... We are saying, you know what, it sounds like the song of let's create employment and then ship everything in raw form. Mm.
Then we tell the other private sector in the country, please create the employment.
You create the employment.
You must do the lifting.
Yeah, we're just going to go there and lie that we will create, but when we will be telling voters that we will create, we mean you will create.
Yeah, on our behalf.
On our behalf. To
make us good, look good.
Yeah, make us look nice, buddy.
Just know we warned you, like, private sector. We're going to send an invoice to you, ne? It's the Helmut and Dwight show.
Like at this point, you're part of the private sector. You can't help but look at most politicians on the corner and go like, what's wrong with these guys? Because they're out there telling people they will create employment.
Why are you running around with a shotgun blasting holes in our air balloons? Well, because we can see that you guys are not making sense, unfortunately.
And he's speaking from a political standpoint, from a political party. Something that, for the millionth time, does not sell a product or offer a service to make money.
It doesn't create a product.
Yeah,
it's... Nor a service.
Look,
And selling me a passport is not a service, actually.
No, it's not.
Because we've discovered that France can walk across the river to visit family. And you as well. You can walk across the river.
Actually, it's a canoe, not walk. That's our Lord and Savior and Peter. But... take my life read. Velvicia University 2026 July applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences, a postgraduate diploma in community health nursing, level 8. Admission requirements: have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institutions. Must be a registered nurse / midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia, HPCNA. Must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse / midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration, 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvicia University, where everyone is an achiever. So we have 6 minutes before the hour of six, and then that will, well, as usual, bring us to the end of Home Run for the day. But I sang 0832888401 for you to participate. And the look of things, no luck. Yeah, so, I know, right? Now, we will create employment.
Yeah.
I think that's an old line. You guys need a new line because that's not going to cut it anymore.
Yep.
It's, it's too old. And, especially in Namibia, I think in Namibia we're upgrading because we are moving from we'll create employment. Actually, we just decided to add a topping on we'll create employment to all, processing plants.
With all gold tomato sauce.
Yeah. Processing plants, all constituencies. Is that based on a survey?
Look, I'm really sorry, but it didn't make sense.
It
still doesn't make sense. It retrospectively thinking back to 2 years back when that political manifesto came out, we were like,
I really want to believe you, but I have to be skeptic until you come up with a well thought out blueprint that indicates what are you going to, what is there to process in Mukwe constituency? What is there to process in this constituency, not in all the regions, all the constituencies? That's one mind numbing. That's a massive undertaking.
No, it is. And it's actually an underestimation of the undertaking because no one was serious. You probably could read between the lines that no one was serious. We don't know if they smoked something or if it was just like that disorder, Tourette's, where the person just rapidly instantly swears at everyone and insults them. And then he's calm. And then, have you ever heard of that disorder?
I've never heard of that disorder, but I know. Tourette's. But I know Samuel Jackson must have that disorder.
No. Samuel Jackson. That Samuel Jackson came with that version pre-installed. So Tourette's is it's not a psychological condition because it's something happens in the person's brain.
Yeah.
Think of it like a kind of a spasmatic reaction.
Yeah.
And then they just start hurling insults.
They start having like a fit and then they calm down.
Yeah, but they just hurl insults everywhere.
Okay.
Now, I also thought it was a joke, but it actually exists. But anyway, so you don't know if that specific policy or that specific elections aim was written by someone who had Tourette's, meaning the person was probably going to say, and in every constituency, we will supply, the aim was probably supposed to be boreholes or something. And then he goes like, build a factory everywhere without the blueprint.
Look, man.
Without the roadmap, because I've now seen what the Europeans are doing here, the EU, with the green industries.
Yeah.
They come and tell you there's a roadmap, and you're like, ah, da, 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 da.
That's fancy language.
You guys had a plan even before we could hear of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So they already thought of us pre-COVID even. That was not COVID planning.
It's called foresight.
Europe knew by 2020 they're going to sign the Great Green Deal. which led to Global Gateway, which led to the Samoa Agreement. They knew it. Did we know we were in the... Did we know we were on the menu?
Nah, I don't think we did.
I also don't think we knew.
Nah, we're just sitting there, we're just attending all this climate Paris agreement. We're just attending all these events. I mean, after all, we just show up, take pictures and eat all the food, hop on a plane and then come back. But look, I think this is where I think it's important, I think, to observe economic trends.
Yeah.
From the economic sphere.
Yeah.
Because the political sphere is full of garbage.
Yeah. And there's a lot of rhetoric there that you don't...
There's a lot of things that the public must hear to feel good.
Yeah.
And, but very far from reality.
And in many cases, there's not much fact backing it up. Yeah, there's probably a document somewhere that gives some insight into what is being stated by a politician. But in some cases, the politicians, they approach a thing without seeing the real world impact.
You know, the dumbest example, one of the dumbest example coming out of the political sphere, Donald Trump's HMA trip to Beijing with his CEOs. They would have avoided all that if they listened to Jim O'Neill from Goldman Sachs from 2000.
Mm.
He told them. Now, this is a man who was talking about something he did for a living.
Mm.
He used his expertise, looked far in the future of economic trends. And so that the economic trends are shifting in the direction of South Africa, Brazil, Russia, and China.
Mm.
If you want to survive, if you want to keep up with economic trends, you may want to make friends out of these guys. What did the American politicians do? They made enemies out of every single one of those guys.
Mm. And what did Donald Trump say before he got inaugurated? He will try and break up BRICS.
Yeah. You know what? China is this. And then, the Strait of Hormuz came up.
The block equals unblock.
And then he hopped on a plane, and now he's just, sitting. I don't think these guys even feel embarrassed. He's sitting in front of Xi, and he's, you are a very good person. People don't like it when I say that, but I say it to them because it's true.
Mm.
Really? Dude, you just tariffed the heck out of my country last year.
Mm.
And I'm like, you know what? I really want to understand politicians, but I think, no, I'm done.
If you really want to see bipolar disorder on...
Just look in politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially American politics and British politics, but yeah. Oh, it's already 6 o'clock.
Yeah, it's already, I wanted to say David's time, but no, it's not David's time. It's business with Roy today. So we are going to, pack the bus here and until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From me.
We'll see each other, guys. Just enjoy the rest of the programming.
Today is Thursday.
Yeah.
I almost say today is Friday. That's how much I'm looking forward to Friday.
Don't be too happy.
It's just tomorrow.
True.
Mm. It's just winter and...
more winter.
Yeah, more winter. And I don't finish that statement.
More winter?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
People's daughters don't want to participate in my winter.
I thought you said you wouldn't stop. You wouldn't complete that statement.
Okay. Oh, it's still incomplete. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. You all have a good evening. And please do stay tuned for Business with Roy coming up with yours truly, HD.